Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. And joining us today is Ryan Anger, the Vice President and Program Director of Bell's future long-range assault aircraft, the FLRAA, to discuss the company's V-280 Valor tilt rotor that's competing against the SB-1 by Sikorsky and Boeing. Ryan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Vago, and great to talk to you again.
It's always a pleasure. Obviously, a bizarre year for us all because of the coronavirus pandemic, which has affected everybody. But your program has been kind of ticking along, and at the end of the day, are ending the year with also a couple of very, very interesting patents that could be very relevant for the future of vertical lift. Walk us through some of the highlights and what the program accomplished this year, because it's been a pretty action-packed 3 years, if memory serves correctly, since the 280 first took to the air.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, today has certainly been this year has been certainly a unique year. We are coming on to our third flight anniversary, December 18th. We first flew our aircraft in 2017, and we've now achieved 200 flight hours on the aircraft. So we've seen a very steady progression, getting through flight test milestones, all of the Bell key performance parameters that we had set out to prove in flight test. That we could have high speed, that we could have long range and get to the reach that the Army customer is looking for a long range assault aircraft, and also prove out low speed agility in terms of level one attitude quickness to show that we have both the capability at low speed at the X, as well as the ability to get to the X when we talk about some of these long range missions that the Army is interested in. So 2020 has been no different in that respect than 2018 and 2019 in our ability to continue to safely execute our flight test program and safely demonstrate the capabilities of the aircraft. And that has been lining up very well with our analysis. Of course, the aircraft was designed digitally, and digital twins were analyzed to predict the capabilities of the aircraft. And of course, very happy to report that it is meeting or exceeding everything that we thought it would do. And we're able to bring the proof to the Army customer, who's been embedded with our team through the JMRTD program, and also through the competitive demonstration and risk reduction program, which we started this year with the Army. So very excited about that. COVID has obviously been impactful to the world. We are no different.
Just really quickly, talk to us about the patents as well you guys have registered that you think are important.
Foundationally, Bell is a technology company. So we've got a team of innovators, and I'll say that team of innovators, it's not just the engineers, it's the folks working on the shop floor, it's the manufacturing team. Everyone looking at how can we do things better? How can we provide more value to our customer? And so what you see in the patent pipeline, you know, coming through now, and of course the pipeline lasts or stretches out many years as we innovate and submit patent applications. But I think you're seeing some stuff that comes out that's come out recently, and a lot of interesting technologies, a lot of things that from an IP perspective, you know, we innovate and we look to protect those innovations, and who knows where they'll go, but we've got a lot of opportunities ahead of us.
Let me ask you, right, any prototype airplane is different from the production airplane, and obviously this has been informing your design. It's been informing the Army of what they want on a FLRAA. The Boeing guys, Boeing Sikorsky team has been doing exactly the same thing in terms of feeding ideas out there. How different is the FLRAA airplane from the 280 Valor that's been flying ultimately? I mean, what are the alterations and modifications you've been making to that design, which presumably should be easier to do now that you're doing it as a digital twin?
Yeah, great question. So when we started our clean sheet design in 2013, we looked at what do we think the Army will want for a long range assault aircraft for that Black Hawk replacement. And so a lot of the design features we incorporated, you know, the large sliding side doors, the lack of a tail rotor, so we could have kind of 360-degree operational safety around the aircraft, all the lessons learned from 500,000 flight hours of V-22, and also a lot of things we learned in terms of affordability and how we design, how we manufacture, and how we maintain the aircraft using a lot of those digital tools. So when we established that design, We had those things in mind, and we really designed an aircraft that's longer than it's got a longer life than 200 hours. 200 hours was kind of our initial, our initial target for how many flight hours we wanted to put on the demonstrator aircraft to prove out a lot of the things that we've proven. But fundamentally, the elements of the design that we used as far as best practices and design criteria, that will carry us well into a production program and an aircraft that has a much longer life. So as far as changes between what we've done in the demonstrator and what we would look to do in FLRAA, we will tune the design based on, you know, the requirements that the Army comes out with. We've spent a long time as an industry informing and reducing risk, but informing the Army on what the capabilities are of today's technology to help them, understand better what their requirements are and what a low risk approach might be to fielding a FLRAA aircraft in 2030.
Coronavirus has impacted everyone, Ryan, and many large organizations, including Bell, but the Pentagon, you name it, have been looking to make some lasting changes in this. As Navy Acquisition Executive Hondo Gertz likes to point out to people, the service itself has been improving how it manages programs, inspects ships. How did coronavirus impact how you guys operate, and what are going to be some of the lasting changes, even after this pandemic is over?
Yeah, it certainly it's been unique for all of industry and government. And I'll say, you know, the number one priority that Bell has is the safety of our, you know, the safety of our workforce. So we follow CDC guidelines and watch very closely how we're managing the employees, how we're managing on-site and off-site work to ensure that safety. So I am very proud to say that Bell's had a great track record in 2020 of being able to continue to execute on our commitments, whether that's from a manufacturing standpoint, from an engineering standpoint, from a flight test standpoint. And a lot of the ways we've been able to do that is by implementing some new tools for collaboration. And so as we went through periods of offsite work, how do we maintain collaboration? How do we maintain connectivity between our internal team as well as our Team Valor teammates and our government customer as well? And so what I think you've found with industry is a lot more, obviously, adoption of a lot more virtual tools for maintaining that connectivity. And that served us very well. And I certainly think, as the pandemic gets managed, we'll continue to use those tools and continue to enjoy the benefits of that increased connectivity while shifting back more towards increased face-to-face connectivity as well. So I think it'll be a hybrid approach going forward. And I think we've demonstrated great success to work in both environments. And I think using kind of the best of each environment going forward, I think we'll be well served.
And talk to us about what's up for the program in 2021.
As you know, we've been in the competitive demonstration and risk reduction phase one effort with the Army. And again, that's to inform the Army on some of those future requirements. That's been going very well. We will continue that activity. And as I mentioned, we are at 200 flight hours with the JMRTD Air Vehicle Concept Demonstrator, the V-280 Valor. We will look to continue flight test of that aircraft as well. And we're working with the Army to structure what that continued testing looks like. As we've been able to demonstrate a lot of the capabilities of the aircraft, over 300 knots, the level one attitude quickness and things of that nature, what are the next things that we can do with the aircraft to inform the Army and get them some of the valuable test data that they're looking for? Some of the things we've been able to do in the past has been shift from things like speed and range and agility because we've demonstrated that, and go more towards some operational maneuvers. So deployment of a fast rope, autonomous flight, sling load operations, the implementation of a distributed aperture system, the implementation of a tactical data link. These are all things, because we're able to execute our test program so efficiently and because the aircraft performed so closely to the models, we were able to expand what we were looking to do in the test program and get into some more of those operational things. So I think you'll see some things published in terms of you know, video and whatnot of some of those additional milestones and test points. But we're pretty excited about that, and we're looking forward to the future and what else we can do with the aircraft.
Ryan, thanks very much. Congratulations on a busy year. Best of luck in 2021, and all the very best for the holidays to you, yours, your family, and your team.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. You as well.
Joining us now is retired United States Navy Rear Admiral Scott Sanders. He's the Principal Program Director at the communications, cyber, and intelligence firm Envistacom, but he's also the founder and owner of Tobacco Barn Bourbon. That's made in St. Mary's County in Maryland. And as an entrepreneurial former naval aviator flying one of the last real true naval aviation airplanes, the E-2C Hawkeye, he's the brainchild of 700 mile per hour bourbon to raise money for the veterans charities Semper Fi and America's Fund. Scott, thanks very much for joining us.
It's good to be here with you, Vagar. Thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure, sir. You're good friends with Art Nalls, a retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel who flew the AV-8B Harrier on active duty and now owns the world's only privately owned Sea Harrier. He's also got a two-seater that's not yet flying. You make the bourbon. He's got the plane. Tell us about the partnership and what you guys are trying to do.
Well, it's just a cool thing because it's a charity thing here. We're going to be able to put two 25-gallon bourbon barrels in each empty fuel tank. So we'll be carrying about 100 gallons total of bourbon airborne. We'll get them on the Harrier. And Art and I were just talking about, because we actually age rum on the USS Constellation in Baltimore. So we do some creative things. It looks like it's a gimmick, but there's actually science behind both the things, whether it's on the Constellation or in our future flight on the Harrier.
And so what happens to the bourbon, right? So folks know that being aboard a ship is great because the lulling movement is good for the development of a good bourbon, especially if you've got it in a nice barrel. Talk to us about what happens when you fly a couple of hundred gallons of bourbon at more than 700 miles an hour.
Awesome question. And it's not so much the speed, it's going to be the difference in pressure. So we're going to get up to about 15,000 feet. So you're going to get a delta pressure up there. I don't know, you know, 8 plus PSI. So I tell people it's like when you have a potato chip bag on an airplane, you know, all the air pushes out. So what'll happen, we're not going to pressurize the fuel tanks. They'll be atmospheric. So we're going to have a lot less air pressure. So it's going to push that bourbon deep, deep, deep into the staves. And obviously the speed and the motion is going to help too, because you got a lot more barrel contact, a lot of oxidation. Those changes the flavors of what are called the cogeners that's in there in the distillate. And it's going to make it a much better tasting bourbon, we think. Nobody's done it before, so we really don't know.
That's great. Are there anything special you have to do, right? So you've got drop tanks, you're putting barrels into drop tanks. Are these standard barrels, unique barrels? Boy, you're using all of your Naval Academy and military aviation scientific capabilities here, aren't you, Scott?
Yeah, it's that, and having flown flight test at Pax River helps too, because you have to coordinate with the FAA, you have to do airspace, you have to coordinate with Pax River. You have to do it national region. We have to coordinate with the Comptroller of Maryland to get the approval to move our bourbon out of bonded storage at our distillery, which is at a farm only about 4 miles away from the airport, put it on the Harrier, and then fly it there. So there is a lot that goes into it, that's for sure. And as well as two major federal bureaucracies, the FAA and what people call ATF, but it's really TTB.
Right, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Yeah. I'm sort of curious about the fit, right? So you're putting wooden barrels into drop tanks, right? So how are you guys doing the engineering that allows you to do that?
Well, we're down here in the home of Navy flight tests. So Pax River, there's a lot of cool little engineering shops that do that. So we've emptied out the drop tanks. We've pulled out the quote plumbing on the inside, mm-hmm. and we found a shop near us that does fittings for the P-8, other aircraft for flight tests at the base. And we're just using them to help us on this. And we thought we were going to be able to put in some 30-gallon barrels, but we would have had to shim out too much, and without going all the engineering, didn't want to have to do another structural integrity test. So we just downsized it to 25 gallon barrels when we're going to be able to fit, you know, just fit those right in without doing any shimming on the metal, and it'll fit right in there and make it work well.
Your flight was supposed to have happened this summer. Obviously, COVID has delayed and put a hook to everybody's plans. When is the flight going to happen? And how do folks participate on this? Because you're doing this for charity. So the more you raise, the better, the more sponsors you get. Talk to us about where you guys are on the flight and where you guys are and how folks can get involved and buy a piece of history.
This is for Semper Fi and America's Fund. It's one of the best veteran charities out there. There's a lot of good ones, and this is one of them. So it's for Semper Fi and America's Fund. There's three ways. It looks like right now we're planning on flying in April of 2021, COVID conditions pending. There's a three phase to helping out on this. One is to buy a ticket for the event. Those are on our website right now. We're only going to sell 100 tickets. You will get there. You will be a part of the history, and you will get the opportunity to buy a bottle if you're one of those 100. The other thing is on our website, people can get in and just get on the list to purchase one bottle. What we're going to do is go down because you have to pick it up in Maryland. So we got a lot of interest outside of the states. And then one thing on my next email for the list of people, they'll have to put a deposit down and say, yeah, I'm going to pick it up in Maryland, those type of things. So we'll get about 400 bottles, 450 bottles or so for people to buy. And we're limiting it to one because we're going to have plenty of people want to do it. And the third thing is getting sponsors. So the cool thing about that, Bhagu, is the sponsorships don't go at us. They write a check directly to Semper Fi and America's Fund. And with that, we have different levels of sponsorships. They can contact me or go through our website to contact us about a sponsorship. We do anything between, we'll get them a flight in the L-39. They can, but like at the $5,000 level, they have the opportunity to buy six bottles. They'll get their logo on the drop tank. They'll get an L-39 ride, and we'll do something special for them at the distillery. And there's a few other things. So there's kind of three ways. They can be a part of the event. They can buy a bottle. Or if somebody would like to sponsor this, that'd be pretty cool. Go to www.tobaccobarndistillery.com. That's where you'll see the 700 mile an hour bourbon to go into. Semper Fi Fund will gladly take donations. People have been donating and putting 700 MPH bourbon in the little tagline there.
Outstanding.
I was going to mention one other thing that's cool with aviation.
Sure.
We're getting a virtual reality camera in the Harrier cockpit. So there'll be a little QR code on the bottle or the box that this comes in. And so you'll be inside the Harrier jet while you're drinking the bourbon. It's kind of cool.
With a pilot of art's formidable skills and obviously record-setting flying booze on a former Royal Navy jet over St. Mary's County. So that's going to be neat. Let me ask you one last question. You're also the incoming chairman of Historic Ships of Baltimore, which is a real jewel in the Inner Harbor, includes the USS Constellation, USS Torsk submarine, last submarine to sink Japanese ships in World War II. And you also have the lightship Chesapeake, as well as the Coast Guard cutter, Roger B. Tawney, that has just an extraordinary history, especially now that we celebrated the 79th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Talk to us a little bit about the ship and its real incredible importance, and more broadly, the challenge and what you're trying to do with the museum going forward, given that COVID has taken a big dent out of every major charitable institution, and keeping these historic ships afloat and in good shape is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, it is. And we've had to shut down. We're in Baltimore. So we've had to lay off probably 80% of the museum staff and workers in there. So we're working not only with the state of Maryland, but other entities to showcase and highlight our great maritime heritage. As you were saying, we have the USS Constellation, the last all-wooden warship of the United States Navy. Coast Guard ship Tawney, she's the last ship afloat that saw action at Pearl Harbor. In fact, if it wasn't for her protecting the fuel dumps there, we never would have been able to get the fleet out the next day. And then also the Torsk, what an awesome thing. She not only sank the last time she was a submarine in World War II, she was so top secret and so high tech, she got inside the Sea of Japan. It's an amazing story how advanced that submarine was for the time. She was the only submarine we got inside the Sea of Japan.
And what are you guys working in order to be able to come back and come back stronger? Because, you know, all organizations are looking for contributions and sponsorships. But again, there are more organizations out there that are struggling, and ship museums in particular have found it to be a bit of a challenge. Navy moving to reclaim and sadly decide to dispose of some of these ships, right? The fewer they are, the easier they are to support, especially as the World War II generation passes. Are you guys all right, you know, from a strategic planning standpoint, given that, you know, a World War II submarine is a lot of work, and a 1854 sloop is even more work?
Yeah, well, we just got Tawny out of the yards, and we're getting ready to put Constellation in the yards, hopefully in a year or two. They take a lot of upkeep, as you know. Anything in salt water is, you know, you have to keep working on. But no, there's a strategic plan to get this done. However, we're always continually looking for support. We do get, in fact, I make another product. It's called USS Constellation Rum. It's actually aged on the Constellation in Baltimore Harbor. That's available at Total Wine, and both Total Wines in Maryland, they're a big supporter of us. We've had a little hookup where the insurance person in Baltimore thinks it's too dangerous to keep rum on a ship, even though I told them we had 300 documented years of French, British, and U.S. Navy where there's never been an accident on it. But what we're trying to get back on, but in the meantime, we still have stocks left that was aged on there.
A couple of tons of gunpowder is a bigger problem than a couple of barrels of rum.
Yeah, I told him there was never a fire, an explosion. There might have been a fist fight, but that's about the worst thing.
Just don't let the cat out of the bag. Scott, thanks very much. All the best of the holidays to you and yours. And looking forward to following up with you next year as you guys get closer to the launch date. Really appreciate it, and all the best to you, yours, and give my best to Art as well.
I will. Thank you, Vago. Good being with you.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.